You're listening to BQN. Assimilate the audio.
Welcome, listeners, to another episode of All Good Things, the Star Trek Universe podcast here on BQN and the Fandom Podcast Network. I'm your host, Mark White, and with me today is the lovely Miss Amy Nelson.
Hello. So good to be here. Lovely week in Las Vegas. I had a wonderful visit for the TNG 35th anniversary. It wasn't really for that. I just had a Star Trek friend come in from Denver, and we went to dinner and we talked Star Trek. So it was really fun.
Awesome. Talking Star Trek, always a blast.
Yeah. So yeah, 35 years for Next Generation.
That makes me feel old. I remember it as it aired. Well, Amy, this is the second week in a row here where we're getting some listener comments and feedback. So yeah, let's dive into that. Amy, do you want to read the first one?
All right. Well, our good friend of the network, Davey, hello, Davey, says, thanks for the shout out. I live in Melbourne, which is the capital of Victoria, but I grew up south of Sydney in New South Wales. A nice try at attempting to pronounce the traditional names of the country. They are tricky. We start a lot of events by acknowledging the traditional custodians of land and Aboriginal names for the land we are on at the time. It's a good idea to rehearse the pronunciation if you're doing it in front of a large group. Ha ha ha. I usually just say, on all the lands which we meet. Thanks.
Thanks for remote working. He's working remotely. He doesn't have to do that now.
Oh, I see. So, okay. Thanks to remote working. Okay, I get it. LOL.
Well, we also got another comment from Iker Cerna, who said, it's been a busy few weeks, but I just spent all morning catching up on the podcast and loved it. So, awesome. Thanks, Iker.
Oh, hi, Iker.
So, just nice. Yeah. Really, we really like Iker.
Yeah. Well, we, you know, spent some time with him at STLV, so.
Well, now it's time for All Good World.
From Las Vegas to Boston, USA to Canada and South America. From the United Kingdom to South Africa. From Russia to Australia, the South Pacific and beyond. This is All Good World.
Each episode, we highlight a different location around the globe where this podcast has reached. Today's episode, we'd love to give a special shout-out to Finland. Hey, Finland. Well, our fun fact this week is the earliest written appearance of the name Finland is thought to be on 3 runestones. 2 were found in the Swedish province of Uppland and have the inscription Finlanti, and the third was found in Gotland. It has the inscription of Finlandi with an I and dates back to the 13th century. The name can be assumed to be related to the tribe name Finns, of which the first known record is from AD 98, so that dates back quite a bit, and that makes sense.
Well, hi, listeners in Finland.
That's another country I really have to check out, because it just, every time I see pictures of Finland, I'm like, this place looks just gorgeous. We have a gorgeous planet, this mm-hmm. great marble floating in space.
We do.
Well, today, listeners, we are going to continue with our undercover series, so this is part 3, and we'll be discussing Discovery's Season 2, Episode 2, New Eden. Previously covered episodes were Enterprise Civilization and Picard's Stardust City Rag.
Those were fun episodes.
Absolutely. I love Stardust City Rag. We covered Civilization, and now I don't even remember what
I know. I said... When you were reading it, I was like, man, what was that civilization one from Enterprise?
Oops. Everybody knows my memory's bad. I don't know what your excuse is, Amy.
Well, it's not TNG. That's my excuse.
Oh, well. I'm sure it was a great episode. So, today's episode, a new signal brings the Discovery to a distant planet, Terralysium. It is inhabited by descendants of human survivors of World War III, which was fought on Earth 200 years earlier. Now, the tricky part here is that they're a pre-warp civilization that never developed the same technologies and stuff on planet Earth. So when the Discovery crew goes to investigate the signals, they have to go undercover. So let's discuss.
Yes, and undercover they go. They're pretty quick on their feet. You know, when Jacob's like, how come you're not working in the fields? Oh, we're just traveling through. We're from the north. Like, you know, I guess that's always the general direction that's safest to come from.
Yeah. Well, you know, it also implies like outer space.
Oh, north being up. Okay.
Yeah, that's what I got out of it.
Oh, but that's, I love that.
Usually when it's like Data or Spock, they're like South America or something like that, or France.
Yeah.
And you're like, sure, guys, sure.
Did they ever say Spock was from anything in like Star Trek 4? I'm just trying to remember. They might have said where he's from.
They probably did.
Yeah, because he had that headband that covered
his ears.
Yeah, his ears, yeah. And his eyebrows. So he could pass for human.
But, you know, in the 1970s, in L.A. or, you know, California in general.
Oh, yeah, those weirdos out there.
Yeah, it wouldn't have been that strange to see his ears or his eyebrows. Right. I think he just could have rocked it. That's just my opinion. So, big questions here that were brought up in this episode is, how do we know how these humans ended up on Terralysium? Now, supposedly it was a red angel, but this is what's always confused me about this episode, because I see it in hindsight, and we've all binged the season at this point. We know it wasn't Michael who goes back and gets them. And also, how does they transport a whole church to that planet? How do they know that? Anyway, whatever. So, we know it's not Michael. And then when Michael asks her mother's like, I don't know about no church. I don't know about no Terralysium. It wasn't her.
So, I thought it was the mom, because she was saying that she was bouncing around trying to get to, right, her, get to Michael.
Uh-huh.
And so, I thought it was, but now that you say that, I don't know how she would even have the capability to move them.
To warp a church filled with people across space because of her suit? But also, she doesn't ever claim to be the red angel that gets the people from Terralysium. Like, she never says that she is.
Yeah.
So, who does? And the suit explodes.
Right.
Big hole in the plot right there. Come on, Discovery writers.
Yeah, that was, I just, at the end of this episode, I was like, so do we know what happened to them? How they got there? Because that, to me, really makes me think. Because we don't have an answer. Listeners, are we missing anything?
Please let us know.
Yeah.
Moving forward. So, something I like about the episode was they did, especially early on in seasons of Discovery, even in episodes that I'm not like totally in love with, the cinematography is solid. And when they open this episode with the Discovery floating through the nebula clouds, you know, and there's the little electrical storm sort of happening, and it's slow, and it's like a beautiful pan shot. That I could get behind. I think that the people that are in the visual effects for Star Trek Discovery deserve all of the awards, and I hope that they've gotten some, because, yeah, they do a great job week after week.
You know, one thing that going along that same idea that I really enjoyed the visual aspect was when they were dropping off the asteroid and then the gravitational pull of pulling that. Like, that visual really set what was going on, because they explain it in words and then we see it in action. And I really think, I don't know what was going on when it first aired. Like, watching it from hindsight, that's definitely one thing that's my initial thoughts about this is, like, I feel like I understand this episode so much better because I know the ending, right? And I feel like, man, did I even understand what they were doing with the asteroid? I don't know, but I understand now.
Yeah. Favorite line from this episode has to be, if you're telling me that this ship can skip across the galaxy on a highway made of mushrooms, I kind of have to go on faith. Captain Pike, one of his most memorable lines, in my opinion. I love it when he says that. It is so on brand for Pike and so humorous.
Yeah.
Pike's great.
One of my favorite lines is, you know, after he's being, he's in his quarters or ready room, I don't know which, and his ribs are broken or whatever, and Burnham comes in. Well, don't make me laugh. And then she's like, well, fortunately for you, I was raised on Vulcan and we're not funny.
No, that was cute.
Yeah, that was.
Yeah.
So I'm going to say this next one because when I first saw Pike in the blue Discovery uniforms, I'm like, oh, bring them back. They are gorgeous. I miss them so much.
Right?
Yes.
Right there with you, Amy. Those uniforms were just so solid. They really looked like Buck Rogers kind of throwbacky kind of thing. A little cat suity, but cat suity on everybody. And they just looked all sleek. I don't know. I liked it.
Yeah.
And it looked good on the ship.
Mm-hmm.
And now it just looks like they're all wearing scuba diver suits, multicolored scuba diver suits in the new, you know, season four.
I can see that a little bit.
Because it is neoprene.
Mm-hmm.
And they all look a little heavier.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's not exactly flattering. But anyway, unpopular opinion that I have about this episode. May Ahern. I like her. I think that the way her character was done at first, when I first watched her, I thought she was like a flesh and blood person. And then, you know, you find out later that she's not and she's been deceased for a while. And then later on, it's not this episode, but you discover that she is like a spore just existing in her. And so that they're sort of having this symbiotic relationship. But the actors that played her really good, the actress they got to play the young version of her, I mean, so good. Casting was really, really on point. I liked her character. I wish that they'd bring her back.
So, question, why do you think it's an unpopular opinion? I like May Ahern, too.
You like her, too?
Yeah.
I just, you know, I heard when the episode aired, people were talking about maybe her being a little... Well, the same criticism people were saying about Tilly, just being a little bombastic and like Barclay kind of a thing, you know.
Well, but in this episode, it makes sense because we, at this point, are thinking May is a manifestation of Tilly's mind, right? So, of course, it's going to have Tilly's bombastic and Tilly's apprehension and Tilly's... Because it's Tilly's mind, you know?
It is her mind, yeah.
That yeah. Makes sense. That's why I like May, because I like Tilly. Man, yeah. She's smart. And talking about the uniforms, this episode makes me miss Tilly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She wasn't really actually my favorite character the first few seasons. But on the rewatches... Especially the early seasons, I'm like, oh, yeah. It's really that version of Tilly.
Yeah.
Yeah. So innocent and full of youth and optimism. And she was very Star Trek.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, Amy, one of the big themes from this week is science versus religion. And there's a lot to unpack here. So what are your thoughts?
Well, I really liked the idea that this civilization, these humans, came together and was like, all right, there's all of these different religions and we're all diverse. Let's create one and let's join all the faiths so that we can work together, right? We're going to accept everyone. We're going to have this dialogue. And what an amazing accomplishment. They have done that when we, for now, I don't know, 2,000+ years, haven't been able to do. Do you think that we, as humans on this planet, could find and create one faith that is representative of all? And if so, what would that look like?
I definitely think it can happen. I there are people that worship the spaghetti monster creature. There are people that, you know, have all kinds of different beliefs that are just, you know, like what is the Scientology that was created? L. Ron Hubbard, it was like a science fiction writer, and he created this whole thing. And so people, I think, want to gravitate towards an idea or a thought process that in their head makes sense to them, that they can align with. And, you know, no shame there. I mean, I'm not religious. But yeah, I think that the idea or the concept is at least one that I would think would be interesting. And I could see people, doing. I'm kind of surprised it's not already a thing.
Mm-hmm. You know, and I think why one of the reasons why it was successful on Terra Elysium is that they have a smaller population. Because I was thinking as you were talking, like, okay, if we had all the inhabitants of the Earth, I don't even know how many billions, trillions there are.
There's at least 11.
Okay. All right. Yeah. And how would we put a limit of, okay, you have to have X number of members for us to consider your faith to be a religion, right? Because do we allow just anyone's beliefs? But when you're dealing with a smaller population, then you're talking to those people and then there's a face with the number. So I think that's why they were more successful. Because we can't do that, I don't think.
It is that, talking about it though, about how many people were on Terra Elysium, got me thinking about, honestly, genetics and how many people were in that church. Because the gene pool, right, is going to be pretty small. How many people do you need to populate the planet when, you know, the gene pool, this is a good math question, the gene pool is so small and you don't want deformities and whatnot. So
right.
And that's what happened, honestly, going back to history, but with Tutankhamun, I learned a couple years ago with King Tut, that he actually died because of all the health issues he had from inbreeding, generations upon generations. And that's why he like had a hard time walking around and died at a young age, was because of that.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
So going along with that, like when Burnham says, well, if science is my religion, and I was like, yeah, why can't we have science as a religion? I don't know. Maybe I'm asking philosophical questions. I don't know. But it's like, if science is a religion, then wouldn't they want to include that in their building of the new faith? And it sounds like Jacob's family was believing in science. So their beliefs should have been represented. Unless science and religion are mutually exclusive.
Well, I feel like they are kind of, because science is more fact-based and you have religion that's more faith-based. So it's kind of apples and oranges. in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. So if they were, and it looked like from, what was that ladies that did the prayer circle that told the story? Looked like she was the spiritual leader and keeping them away from technology.
Yeah. Didn't they call her mother something or something mother?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They also mentioned that Awoshikin came from a Luddite collective. Now, I had to look that up because I wasn't sure what that even was. And I looked this up a while ago, but I re-looked it up for this podcast. So a Luddite is a person opposed to industrialization, automation, computerization, or new technologies in general. So if Awoshikin grew up in a Luddite collective, that leads me to believe that essentially she was grew up similar to the Amish community, where they don't use technology. That's interesting aspect. So how did she end up in Starfleet, or at what age did she leave the collective? Because now she is on the bridge, mind you, of, you know, one of the leading science vessels, you know, in Starfleet.
Oh my gosh, yeah. And we don't ever get that answered ever again.
No.
Wow, I did not know when she was saying that what that meant. So that's very interesting where we have Pike, who was raised by a minister. Well, no, I'm sorry. Raised by a scientist who dabbled in ministry, right? Mm-hmm. And then we have Owo, who was raised Luddite, and we have Burnham, who was raised Vulcan, so ultra technology,
mm-hmm.
You know, very interesting combination. It's like the three little bears with Pike in the middle.
That's quite an away team.
Mm-hmm. I love that.
I was wondering this as well. This is sort of a Star Trek trivia that I didn't find an answer to online, but I'm hoping... I mean, we have a lot of listeners all over the planet. And I know we say this all the time, let us know. But really, really let us know this next one. I'm very curious. So in this episode, we come upon the church and there's all those stained glass windows. And one of the first windows you see has Christ depicted in it. Now, I know we've seen the devil many times in Star Trek. But I don't actually remember ever seeing Christ on Star Trek before this. So if it happened, I'd be curious to know when.
Hmm. Yeah. I think it is. I mean, I can't remember, and I'm definitely no expert. But that is very interesting that they chose, yeah.
Gene Roddenberry is rolling in his grave.
Uh-huh.
Well... Starfleet orders versus leadership is something else that comes up in this episode. And I'd love to know what your thoughts are, Amy, on how the away team handled, you know, what the directive was for the mission compared to what they had to do once they were on the ground, the kind of leadership it took to handle the situation in the moment. Yeah, what do you think about that?
Yeah. Well, I was thinking about this with Burnham in particular because she was following Pike's orders completely. And what got me thinking was season one. Burnham doesn't follow orders. She disobeys orders. She was the first mutineer in Starfleet, as we will recall. LOL. And so why would she all of a sudden... agree to and in her mind say, well, no, Jacob be damned. I am going to follow Pike's orders. You know that she wanted to tell Jacob. Jacob obviously had the correct answers, but she still stayed undercover, kept the story, didn't reveal anything. And I was like, okay. But then on the other hand, when she doesn't follow orders, she's basically rewarded, right? Because, and Starfleet does. because you're thinking outside, you're thinking for yourself, and that makes a good leader. So it's this tug and pull that I'm seeing with Burnham. Is it now because Pike is captain? In season one, we didn't really have a captain. Oh, it was Lorca, you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know.
Amy.
Yeah.
Could you look into Daddy Pike's eyes as he's telling you something? And then go behind his back and go against what he had to say? I don't think so. He could tell me to run around the block, and I'd be like, okay.
But her relationship with Georgiou was much stronger, mm-hmm. and she still disobeyed her orders.
Yeah, but I think she is on a quote-unquote apology tour, where she is trying to... make amends for past discretions and learn and grow and get better. And she does stumble along the way, even into season three, but it's a progress and it's a growth that her character is on this journey. And she does try. And here's an example of her trying to listen, because I think part of it's trust too. I was a little joking about Pike, but no, I think a lot of people respect Pike, and even, you know, the Admiral Cornwell had mentioned in this season that the reason they kept him out of the war was because they wanted the best of Starfleet to survive. And, you know, here's Burnham knowing that Pike represents the best of Starfleet, and he is giving her a direct order, and she, it's almost like he represents Starfleet itself. And so here she is trying to do good by Starfleet and do good by Pike.
I like it. An apology tour. I can work with that. Yeah. And to your point, when she's talking to Pike and was like, you know, well, you have a decision. That's only a decision a captain can make. Is there a level where you making those tough choices happens, like you have the freedom to do that? Because it didn't feel like Burnham had the freedom to inform Jacob, yes, you're right. Like those lower deckers, do they have the, you know, autonomy or freedom to make those choices? Or because they're so low on the totem pole, if you will, that they don't get to make those choices? They just have to, here's your orders, follow them.
I want to say it's situational, but here I feel like it was directly an order given to not reveal where they're from or technology or anything like that. Pike didn't want to contaminate the society, you know, didn't want to break the prime directive. So I think she's trying it really hard, but she also, in her own Burnham way, was trying to like get her cake and eat it too.
Mm-hmm.
Like when she was talking to Pike, she was trying to convince him to come onto her side and do that thing that she wanted done. And she ended up getting her way because he did. But it was the way she went about it that was more, I guess, professional and allowed him to make the choice. She brought him to the watering hole, and she put his face down next to the water and got it really close, but she didn't dunk him.
Good analogy.
Another question. I was wondering what your thoughts were on, I guess, the Prime Directive, General Order 1. Does it actually apply here? Because this is something I was thinking about while watching it. To me, it never seemed like it should. Because they were coming from Earth, and they were on this whole other planet. I feel like General Order 1 or Prime Directive wouldn't apply. But I say that as my opinion, but knowing that Starfleet would probably disagree with me.
Let me draw a parallel and see if I'm comparing apples to apples or apples to oranges. So in TNG, the wonderful cryogenic people that they rescue, right? You know, the wonderful ones.
Oh, yeah. There's the songwriter dude.
Yes. That is the apparently living guy on for eternity, right? We see him in Lower Decks. Billy, D, not Billy Dean. What am I talking
Billy about? Billy D. Williams, yeah.
Yeah.
He lives forever, too.
Yeah. Anyway, so those people, they are found. They came from Earth, 20th century. We find them. They're woken up. And they are, okay, here we are. Here's all this technology. You were right. You were right. If you froze yourself, you could be healed because, you know, Dr. Mm-hmm. Crusher just heals all their, you know, liver disease and cancer and stuff like that. So they were right. Isn't that the same thing? They came from Earth. They wanted to wait for the Earth to, you know, the wars to die out. So then... Now they're being found, just like the cryogenics were found by the Enterprise. Like, they found them.
No, I disagree.
So then General Order 1 applies.
No, I disagree because they're not a society. They're just frozen in time. They weren't on a planet fishing and swimming and, you know, shopping. They were just in stasis, which is sort of different than settling and creating a culture and a society and a religion and stuff all of their own unique to that planet. Yeah, I think that's what separates the two.
Okay.
Yeah, with the cryotube people, it was more like an archaeological find.
So then because Terralysium is a society, General Order 1 applies.
Yeah, which I think is dumb.
It really is interesting that the writers had them sort of regress from technology. I still can't get over that. I just don't know if any human right now would not use technology.
Amy, if you and I and all of our Star Trek friends from our chat group, if all of us get beamed to Terralysium today with just what we got in our pockets, right? That's it. Would we be able to remake an iPhone?
But like, we would get to that point eventually because we know we had it. So yes, we would be like, all right, we got to go digging up some metals, digging up some ore. Like, we have that knowledge. So
Amy would turn into Captain Kirk fighting the Gorn. She'd like, here's some, you know, phosphorite, you know. I see it here.
But I'm saying, oh my gosh, how amazing would that be?
That would be you, though.
We'd have all the brains if all of... Just think about it, Mark, all of our little Star Trek group. Let's just take STLV or the cruise and just transport it to Terralysium. We would not end up like New Eden.
No, we wouldn't be able to survive, Amy. There's no way we could survive. Our society would be doomed very soon. We wouldn't even make it a generation because we're all gay. So there goes your plan right there, Amy. Shot. You're the one straight woman, but surrounded by gay men.
It's just not a large enough gene pool if I'm just one woman.
Yeah, I don't even know if there's any bi guys in our community, is there? I don't know.
Yeah, why not?
I need a man, perhaps a man like you. What is happening? This is Thursday. I don't know. I've been drinking.
That will be edited.
Will it?
Yes. So, how about some trivia?
Amy, trivia is a great idea. I love trivia. And there wasn't a lot this week, but there was some fun ones. This episode's script did not include the moment when Tilly hurries out of sick bay in one particular direction and then disappears around the corner and reappears going the opposite direction. That idea actually came from director Jonathan Frakes. And Alex Kurtzman, when he was watching the dailies, phoned him right up to tell him how much he loved that scene and laughed his butt off. So...
Oh my gosh, awesome. I'm so glad you put that in as trivia because I wanted to mention that Jonathan Frakes directed this episode and I think it's beautiful. But I do have one question for Mr. Frakes. Why, when they power up the church, the windows are blasting white streams of light, but yet I know they're stained glass windows. So why is that not colorful, and why am I not seeing the design of the stained glass window?
He didn't have Amy Nelson as a science consultant.
Or a light consultant, apparently.
Oh, my Lord. Somebody over there is really dim-witted.
Ooh! Ba-da-boom. That was bad.
Sorry, I had to throw some shade.
Oh, my gosh! Where are you coming up with this stuff?
AGT After Dark.
Oh, my gosh. That's awesome. Did you notice Pike's new ready room?
So, I didn't.
Well, when I saw it, it was reminded me of the spaciousness that is his ready room on Strange New Worlds, right? And So the little bit of trivia is that in Brother, previous episode, he mentions that he needs a new ready room. And now in New Eden, we see it. And it has some artifacts from his Southwestern heritage around. So It's more Pike feeling.
So I didn't think of it because I've seen Discovery so many times in rewatches and whatnot that I couldn't necessarily remember when the ready room changed. I guess I wasn't thinking because I see the ready room in later seasons and whatnot. I'm like, oh, they're on the ready room. So I didn't remember that. Yeah, it was different for Lorca.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he had that big, humongous table. And now in Pike's, he's got a couch and, yeah.
Well, he had the fortune cookies too.
Oh, yes. Because that required the humongous table, the small bowl of fortune cookies. Yeah.
Was it Giorgio that shoots one with a phaser or something?
Oh, yeah.
Well, another interesting fact is that Jacob's distress beacon device uses the same sound effect as the Romulan-coded transmission signal in the TOS episode Balance of Terror, which was just referenced at the end of Strange New Worlds Season 1. So, full circle moment there, too.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, sure.
As every listener knows that I did not, because that's original series.
Okay, Balance of Terror to Amy. I mean,
is that the Klingon or Romulan one? Romulan. Romulan-coded transmission.
It's the first appearance of the Romulans.
Oh, is it the female Romulan?
Yeah. You have seen that.
Yeah, everyone knows I have watched original series every episode now twice. But okay. I just can't tell you a thing about it.
Oh, we'll have to add that to the list.
No, we have. We cover we just talked about Assignment Earth.
I know. But
so let's cover some other stuff and then we'll, you know. Whew, dodge that
Amy's
bullet.
Getting scared. She's getting scared of the series.
No, that is pretty cool. And I like those callbacks and those Easter eggs that just fly right over me. But for you listeners, that is very, very good. See, you can enjoy these shows if you don't know previous Star Trek.
I mean, yeah, I guess in theory. I mean, I listen to a heck of a lot of podcasts. I listen to most of the ones on this network, and I'm not always watching along, but sometimes it's just nice to have the voice on in the car that is not shouting politics at me or anger. So, yeah.
Agreed.
Yeah. Well, Amy, do you got some final thoughts about this week's episode?
You know, for an undercover episode, it's definitely unique because we're visiting another human. Like, usually undercover is going undercover, literally. Like, you know, getting some nose ridges or some tattoos, you know. This one, they're just, you know, changing clothes as if they're going to a holodeck. So it's weird to think about them undercover. But yes, they truly are. And they've got this cover story I think it is a really fun episode. I remember thinking this is going to be great because Discovery's going to have like the Red Angel give us a direction and we're going to go solve a problem and then we're going to go to the next signal and we're going to solve that problem and each piece is going to be a puzzle and we're going to put it together. Mm-hmm. And then they didn't do that. I remember having that excitement of what could be, of what I wanted Discovery to be. And I got those feelings all over again. I'm like, man, that would be so great if they're following the signals and doing good along the way. Like,
Well, they did. And I mean, I feel like the puzzle pieces did, for the most part, fit together at the end. Like, you know, we find out that most of the signals were Burnham, except for the one that brought the people to Terralicia, which is a giant plot hole, as we mentioned.
Mm-hmm. What about your final thoughts?
I was filled with nostalgia watching a season 2 episode early on of Discovery. It's been a while since I have done that. I don't do a lot of Discovery rewatches because I've been rewatching Strange New Worlds on a loop since it ended, probably. And then the random stuff we talk about. But this was a good one. My favorite, I'll say this, you know, the listeners already know what's going to come out of my mouth because I've said it 100,000 times. But my favorite Discovery episodes are the episodic episodes. And when you're doing the Red Angel thing, it gets a little episodic because they do come to a conclusion each week. And that was one of the things I liked about season 2. Season 2, you can blame Pike's charisma. You can blame the episodic nature. But it was just a solid season for me. One of my favorite seasons of Discovery was season 2. Yeah. So I was happy to return to that sandbox for a day.
The Red Angel story part is my least favorite of the seasons.
You were just saying how you like the fact that it allows them to be episodic.
I wanted that to happen, and it didn't. So I guess in hindsight, I was disappointed at the end of season, or at the end of episode 2. Like, watching I was disappointed.
I didn't like the burn season. What's the burn? Oh, it's the guy that's having a panic attack.
Oh. But
anyway, let's end on a positive note.
I liked that one, actually. Well, better than this one. The Red Angel for me is that's the lowest. Yeah. Oh, my goodness.
We're supposed to end on a positive note. Yay, Star Trek.
Yay. Oh, but now I really am curious. How would you rank them?
Oh.
Okay. I'm going to go. Okay. 4. 4 is my favorite. Then Lorca. Then the David Ajala. 3.
Burn.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then 2.
Oh, wow. Yeah, no. No, no, no.
4-1-3-2. Yeah.
Okay. This is a fun game. I will say... So we're going from favorite to least favorite?
Mm-hmm.
Season 2, season 1, season 3, and season 4 was my least favorite.
Hmm.
I loved the beginning of season 4, don't get me wrong. That first episode when, you know, Tilly was on the station and the gravity goes on it and they're trying to save her and it's spinning out of control and it was just like, if this is the way they're starting the season, this is going to be the best season ever. And then it just... I don't even remember what happened. I remember that one episode, and I don't remember anything else.
Hmm. Wow.
It's just a wash. Just not even... Nah. There was something with a prison, I think. Anyway, whatever.
Wow. Cool. All right. Well, listeners, you can let us know how you would rank the 4 seasons.
Yeah, I should put up that poll. I will. I will put up that poll for our listeners.
Well, next week, listeners, go ahead and put in some Voyager because we are going to Holodeck Malfunctions. We're going to watch The Killing Game, parts 1 and part 2.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know this episode. It's so good. It's the Nazi Herogen. Is it paper origin?
Yeah.
Yeah. Origin.
I love how this was done. And it's so callbacky. And this was one of the examples of Voyager connecting back with, like, the original series. Because you remember, like, the original series, like, you know, they had an episode where they fought the Nazis or did something, right? And dressed in, like, Nazi uniforms. I don't remember. But there's Nazis in the original series.
Okay.
So it just reminded me of that. It's always great when we get to fight the Nazis.
Yeah.
We would love to hear what you thought of today's episode. And hope you'll join our Facebook group. It's called the BQN Collective. And you can find us there so we can continue our discussion. You can also tweet your thoughts at AllGoodPod. We'd love for you to reach out. We love the interaction. Guarantee you, if you comment at us, and it's nicey nice, we will read it on the air. And if you crab at us, we probably won't. Please follow the network on Twitter and Instagram at BQN Podcasts. We have also partnered with our friends at the Fandom Podcast Network, where you can find us there by searching their master feed. So, Amy, where can people find you when you are not cobbling together a new religion based on all of the religions of Earth plus science?
Yes. Thank you for including that, because I would be doing that along as mining for some ore to get these metals going.
That's right.
So you can find me here in the network talking all things TNG on Galaxy Class. I'm also on Union Federation talking Orville and new Star Trek. I am on Twitter at Miss Amy Nelson, but my favorite place right there at the BQN Collective. And do you know how fun the BQN Collective is? I just want to give a huge shout out to our up-and-coming Dr. M. Mahendran, who week after week gets us to be more active by doing an Apple Watch challenge. And listeners, if you would like to join the BQN and that weekly challenge and you have an Apple Watch, come on into BQN. It's there every week. And it's so fun to see the steps. I'm never first. That's okay. But it's fun just having it, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's a whole bunch of the hosts of the network competing with a whole bunch of the listeners. And, you know, we talk to each other about the progress, and you can send each other little, you know, you're doing great, like encouragements and stuff. And it's really fun to help connect a little bit further with your favorite hosts.
Yeah. So, Mark, where can people find you when you're not secretly transporting down to a pre-warp civilization and sharing all of your technology?
Well, when I am not sharing my technology with a pre-warp civilization, people can find me on the BQN Collective page. They can find me on Twitter at MarkWhite207. They can find me on Instagram if they want, at mw.207. And if they become a patron of the network on Patreon, they can listen to my show It's Green. And you know what, listeners, we have a new episode coming around the bend, because I'm recording this weekend another interview.
That's awesome. I'm very looking forward to hearing that.
Well, please hit the subscribe button on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts and leave us a star rating and written review. That helps others to find the show.
At this time, we would like to give a special thanks to our associate producers, Mahendran Radhakrishnan and Tim Cooper. Also, thanks, Graham Kelly, for our opening. I'm going to do that again. Also, thanks to Graham Kelly for our opening and closing music.
If you'd like to help us keep all of our shows coming to you each week, you can become a patron of the network on Patreon. Join the Hive to enjoy It's Green, Amy's Math Moments, and other network perks. With a monthly subscription of $5 or more, you can join our meetings on the Hive Mind on the second Saturday of each month. Visit patreon.com/BQN to get all the details and watch your messages.
And listeners, as I was doing research for this one podcast, I came across another math moment that I'm going to be sharing with you. So it's going to be coming out. We're going to have another episode. Did you listen? I really liked my last episode.
I told you the last episode of Amy's Math Moments was the best one yet.
Out of two. No. But now, no, I'm really excited for what I found from New Eden, so it'll be good.
Thank you for listening, and we hope you'll join us as we search out
all good things.